recognizing for a very late floor session in which there were many impassioned speeches about apparently issues that were terribly important. And we're late getting started here, but we did want to allow some of the members to get a bite to eat before they came in. This is House Water Committee, June 8th, Wednesday, and we are dealing with House Bill 3494, and we are going to open our work session on 3494 with a subcommittee of the committee for the present time, and we will move on from there, and I'd like Mr. Sussman to come and give us a little bit of an expansion of his overview that he abbreviated for us in the last meeting of the committee.
And Mr. Chair, if I may, members of the committee, just want behind your staff measure summary, we received the facts from the Oregon Trout Association submitting their testimony on House Bill 3494 for your review. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Becky. Please proceed, Adam.
For the record, Adam Sussman with the Oregon Department of Water Resources, and I appreciate the opportunity to maybe expand a little bit upon the overview that the committee was provided at the last hearing on House Bill 3494. And I've provided the committee what I've described as supplemental testimony, which sets out a chronology of events in the basin running through page 2, and then on pages 3 and 4, some highlights of the Water Resources Commission's rules regarding groundwater mitigation and mitigation banks and credits. And what I'd like to do, instead of going through the chronology in detail, maybe start off by just hitting some of the high points, and some of these you did get in the chronology discussion by Ms. Russell and others, and that is that these scenic waterways that we're talking about were designated in 1970. We also had a very important Supreme Court case in 1988 known as the Dyack case that signaled to the department that we needed to understand the amounts of water, if you will, and flow that were necessary to meet the requirements of the Scenic Waterway Act for fish, wildlife, and recreation. And that's the bullet there in 1988. And based on that court decision, the department staff and the Water Resources Commission did evaluation of all the scenic waterways in the state of Oregon and established flows that we felt needed to be met in order to be consistent with the Act. And that was in 1991 where we established those flows for the Deschutes Basin. In the next bullet you'll see there in 1993, there was also a comprehensive groundwater study started in the Deschutes Basin, and if any of you have ever been down into, say, the Crooked River Gorge, it's fairly intuitive that the groundwater and the surface water in the Deschutes Basin are hydraulically connected because the groundwater is shooting out of the side of the canyon, and it's fairly intuitive. But this study was really to provide a really strong quantitative understanding of that relationship. Then in 1995, we ran into a bit of a problem in that we had a number of groundwater permits in the basin that were being contested based on this relationship between the groundwater and the surface water. And we needed a tool to deal kind of with this contentious issue in 1995. And that's what Senate Bill 1033 did. That's the bottom bullet on the first page. And without getting into a lot of detail, I'll just say in general what this bill did was it allowed the issuance of permits to continue while the department was gathering this quantitative understanding of the surface water, groundwater connection, but also established a trigger that based on a preponderance of evidence that the department was to gather, where we concluded that the impact of groundwater on surface water was 1% or 1 CFS of the flow, a trigger was triggered. And when that trigger was triggered, any new groundwater permit would be required to provide mitigation. Okay, so that the stepping off point to this whole discussion we're having started really in 1995 with the passage of this bill. A number of other events occurred, and I'm now on the second page, the second bullet down. And in 1998, we had the preliminary results of that study that was, again, to quantify the relationship between groundwater and surface water. And the bottom line from that groundwater study is that there is a strong hydraulic connection, and without mitigation, the use of groundwater can, in fact, reduce surface water flows. Now, having reached that conclusion, the department, remember, reaching back to 1995 and Senate Bill 1033, we concluded that the trigger that required new permit applications to be associated with mitigation was triggered. And so we were sort of now at the next jumping off point, if you will, in 1998, and began to wonder how are we going to administer the mitigation that's required in the Scenic Waterway Act. And so what I really want to focus on now for a couple minutes is just the extensive and exhaustive process that the department went through to get to the point where we are now. And we started that with the Deschutes Basin Steering Committee, and I think I handed out to you with my testimony just this list of individuals, just to give you an idea of the broad representation of that group. And that group actually, you know, was a facilitated group. It was involved in a memorandum of understanding, and they met on almost a monthly basis from early 1999 all the way to 2001, wrestling with this requirement to provide mitigation and how that would occur. I was not involved directly with that group, and so I can't really speak to all the details, but what I do know is that there were subcommittees on various aspects of it, everything from hydrogeology to legal aspects, and evaluated this thing to death. And at the end of the day, in that steering committee process, the goal of then-director Martha Pagel was to develop kind of a broad mitigation management plan for the basin that would sort of address this requirement to mitigate, not on a case-by-case permit application by permit application basis, but in a broader sense. And unfortunately, she never got there. The members of that group just could not reach consensus on what this mitigation strategy, what this management program plan would look like. I just wanted one of the bullets underneath there, the June 2001, I just wanted to remind the committee that in June 2001, as part of the effort to facilitate the work that was going on in the basin, the legislature passed House Bill 2184, which established the authority to form a mitigation bank and a system of mitigation credits. And this was all sort of getting set up, if you will, for the development of a mitigation program in the basin. And again, the purpose of that is that you can have people creating projects to put water in stream for mitigation, and that project could then be used to provide credit for somebody who needed to mitigate for a new groundwater permit. So it was a really great way to sort of package who needed something and who had something. In September 2001, the steering committee process, the wheels essentially came off, and it was then Director Paul Cleary's thoughts that what we needed to do was we needed to move on. We had essentially been, for the most part, in a moratorium in terms of issuing new groundwater permits in the Deschutes Basin before 1998. And since we couldn't get consensus of the larger group, we felt we had no other choice but to move ahead and develop a process for individual permit applicants to provide mitigation so that they can move on and get a water right. And if you see in that bullet, I just really wanted to give you an idea, again, of the extensive public process. We had 4 public hearings and 75 written comments on the first draft of the rules. And then we went ahead and developed a second draft of the rules based on all of that input, and had another hearing in the Deschutes Basin, which I will never forget, because there were lots of people there and lots of media. 30 people testified, 160 written comments, and lots of input. And I went back and looked through my records. I counted at least 7 times that we were before the Water Resources Commission, either explaining what we were doing or checking in or talking about the groundwater study, somewhere between 1988 and 2001, about 7 times in front of the Water Resources Commission. So at the end of the day, after all of this public process, you will find, and I do have a copy of the rules that I'm going to pass out in a minute, you will find that these rules have the fingerprints of many organizations and many individuals that were concerned about where we were going and how we were doing it, and I'll walk you through those in a minute. But I think where Water Watch and the groups that appealed and the department, where they fundamentally could not agree, because I think we agreed on a lot of things in the rules, but where we fundamentally could not agree was, like we talked about the other day, the statutory standard for maintaining flow. And the way I like to describe this is what I heard, and maybe Water Watch and other organizations were saying something differently, but what I heard was that it was their desire and their understanding of the statute that the molecule of water coming down the river to mitigate the molecule of water of impact that's not making it to the river, that they shall meet at a particular place and at a particular time. And we just, based on years of understanding of how the basin works and the complexity of the hydrogeology, we just could not figure out a way to mitigate on that level, on that scale. And instead, we took an approach to mitigation that we think takes into account the complexity of the basin, the hydrogeology of the basin, the reality of how you can mitigate. And we took an annual volumetric approach. So the mitigation and the rules required by the commission requires bucket-for-bucket mitigation on an annual basis as a volume of water. And the purpose of that is to ensure that we're providing a volume of water to the Lake Billy Chinook area so that we can maintain the status quo, if you will, of water. So if somebody is consuming an acre foot of groundwater, they have to put in an acre foot of surface water in the river. And those two essentially do meet, maybe not on the same day, but they meet down in the Lake Billy Chinook area. And that, based on what we understand how the basin works and how we could administer it, we believe is protective of the values of the scenic waterway flow, which are very important to the department and the state of Oregon, the in-stream water rights in the lower river, which are extremely important to the department and the state of Oregon. And again, where we couldn't agree was, you know, sort of on the meeting of the molecules. And to add to that, just, you know, and I apologize that, I mean, this is a long story and it's a complex story, but you have to appreciate that the flows that we're trying to protect, let's say in the lower river, are actually met 70% of the time over the long term.
Mr. Chair, are you wanting us to hold questions at the end?
Be my guest.
Thank you. Thank you, Adam. This is all very informative.
Oh, may I excuse me.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Adam, when you're talking, I can't remember the word you used. Was it flow or volume? Volume of water.
Right.
So that would be over a 12-month period, right? Correct? That's
Chair Jensen.
Let you know where I'm leading. So I can assume that in March, April, there would be a huge amount of water coming through, maybe in August, just a trickle. So can you sort of help me with that?
Representative Jensen and Representative Tomei, that's a good question. The volume of water that you need to provide under the rules for mitigation is on an annual basis. So let's say within a calendar year, okay? But the reality is that the water for mitigation in the Deschutes Basin comes from irrigation water rights. And those water rights are typically something that you could take off the land, transfer in stream, sometime between, say, the period of March and October of each year. And so that mitigation, the volume of water that the groundwater user would be putting in stream, is typically somewhere in that March through October time of year.
Follow up, please. I'm still somewhat confused. But do you understand what I'm saying? The total volume of water through 12 months could be a certain amount, whatever it is, that meets the rules. But are there some requirements that require a certain amount to be in the river in August and September?
Close.
Yes, thank you.
Representative Jensen, Representative Tomei, I understand your question. Sometimes the mitigation that's being provided in stream has particular sideboards on it that you can only manipulate so much. For example, if it's an irrigation water right that you're transferring in stream for mitigation, you're, for the most part, in the Deschutes Basin sort of restricted between the March and October period. Otherwise, you may actually be harming other water rights upstream or downstream, other irrigation water rights. But within that March through October period, the rules require, and I'd like to walk through some of the highlights of those rules, the rules require the department to work with the other natural resource state agencies to ensure that we maximize the benefits of that mitigation water. So to the extent that we can manipulate, you know, more water in this month versus that month, we do get that kind of input from the other state natural resource agencies, yes.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. So, Mr. Chair, if I could, I'd like to just maybe walk through a little bit of the fingerprints that I described on the administrative rules.
Please.
Okay, so I do have... So turning to my testimony on page 3, and I am having the administrative rules handed out, and the testimony does sort of cite you to particular places, but I wanted folks to understand all of the bells and whistles, and as our Director Cleary used to say, all the belts and suspenders that we provided in these rules, and I'll just tick through them very quickly. First of all, you should understand that except for a block of water of 200 CFS, the rules say that groundwater appropriation in the Deschutes Basin is closed. So we sort of set out a block of water, 200 CFS, and after that, there is no groundwater appropriation allowed. The second bullet talks about how under these rules, the commission can actually lift or modify that cap, but in order to do that through the rules, first of all, they have to stop and take a deep breath and evaluate how things are going when we get to 150 CFS of appropriation, or January 1, 2008, whichever comes first. They have to review the rules on a 5-year interval, and we also have to report annually to the commission in cooperation with the state natural resource agencies to ensure that we're meeting the spirit of the rules. And the third bullet, and again, if you read this carefully, you'll see I tried to describe how the changes that were made to the rules based on the public comment, and a lot of comment was about what what are you going to do if the annual volumetric mitigation that you've developed doesn't work? Because the whole rules are based on annual volume of mitigation with extensive monitoring to ensure that the scenic waterway flows and the in-stream water rights are not met less often than they were over a historic period of time. So we had a measuring stick. And what the rules say is that if we find that we're not meeting the measuring stick, which we believe we will and are, that the commission shall declare the groundwater study area, this is about a 4,500 square mile area, a critical groundwater area, or close the basin to any further administration or appropriation, or take any other administrative action that we find necessary to ensure that the scenic waterway flows and the in-stream water rights are not being met less often.
Adam, I have a question about how did the commission come up with the 200 CFS cap? I mean, was that based on modeling that was done? How did you come up with that cap?
Representative Dingfelder, members of the committee, there's no science behind it other than that was about the amount of water that had been appropriated over a period up to about 1995, and we couldn't see the demand, you know, being greater than that. I mean, there really was no scientific basis, I guess I should say, for the 200 CFS.
So just to clarify, Adam, it was based more on demand versus impact. I mean, what I'm trying to figure out is, you know, if there was, I mean, that's why I'd asked if there was some modeling to see what the effect of having that cap up to 200 CFS was. And you're saying it's based on historical use, is what it sounds like, primarily.
Well, Representative Dingfelder, members of the committee, while the 200 CFS cap is a number, we never made any assumptions that that would allow any impact. It was simply a number that we thought was a reasonable place to stop and take a deep breath and check how the program was working so that we could sort of really measure the impact. But we never chose it saying that that was, say, an acceptable amount of impact in terms of what we were doing, because that was not the case. So the rules really set out what the committee or what the commission would need to do if we weren't in fact meeting the bar that we set out. The last bullet on page 3, I think, really summarizes the fingerprints that I like to describe on these rules, where this is not a willy-nilly put some water in the stream and here's your permit mitigation program. There are a lot of sideboards on it, and the last bullet on page 3 really lays those out, that the mitigation water needs to be provided within the zone where your impact from your groundwater use is occurring. That mitigation water that's being put in stream can't be, say, associated with, I'm going to cut down some juniper so I think there'll be more groundwater discharging. It has to be water that's legally protected in stream, and it has to be committed for the life of the permit, and it has to offset your consumptive use. So there's some pretty significant standards there. And I know, Mr. Chair, you're in a hurry to get out of here, I think, pretty quickly. So I'll just leave the rest of the bullets for you to read at your leisure. The couple on page 4 at the top, getting to Representative Tomei's question, the rules do set out a process for the department to work with the other state natural resource agencies to ensure we're maximizing the benefits of mitigation water. So that's just kind of some highlights of the rules. And again, after an exhaustive public process and a lot of deliberation by the commission and the department staff, and we've been in front of this body talking about this for years, those are the rules that were adopted by the Water Resources Commission in September of 2002. And in the end, you know, as I just sort of described the molecule story, in a way, in a very strictly constructionist view of the statute, The Court of Appeals agreed with Water Watch that the maintain standard in the Scenic Waterway Act does not allow any diminution of flow at any time, at any place, in any fashion. And first of all, we disagree with the court's interpretation. And we will be on a separate track, if necessary, seeking a review of that. Because, again, the department's...
Excuse me.
Yeah.
Representative Burley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry to interrupt, Alan, but since we are a little short on time, a few questions, if I may. First of all, the USGS study that came out, I thought there were two things that they reported in there that were particularly of interest. One was the estimated volume of water in the aquifer in a Deschutes Basin, and secondly, their estimate of how long that water actually was or is in the aquifer or has been in the aquifer. Could you enlighten us on that a little bit, please?
Well, Representative Jensen, Representative Burley, that is true, and I the way I always like to respond to the vast aquifer in the Deschutes Basin, it is a truly vast groundwater resource. The problem is not so much with the groundwater resource, but the sort of legal restrictions on the surface water that sort of get us to the problem. But your other point is very well taken, that and I didn't really get an opportunity to explain this, but in sort of the molecule analogy, you could begin pumping groundwater, and the impacts on the lower river could show up anywhere from 2 to 5 to 7 years. And so using the molecule analogy, I guess we should sit back and wait for 7 years for someone to provide mitigation, but that's not what this program does. The day the permit's issued, that person is required to provide mitigation on an annual basis for the full amount of water that they could take under their permit. And so in a way, if you compare that to the molecule analogy, I believe it's more protective and actually makes more sense on the ground than how some would interpret we should implement this program. So that's a good point, Representative.
Follow up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Or have there been any measurable impacts, positive or negative, on the flows in the Deschutes River since these mitigation rules have been in effect? And also, please answer that in the context of above Lake Billy Chinook and below the Pelton Roundbutte complex of dams and how the flows are regulated below the dams.
Well, Representative Jensen and Representative Burley, that's a great question. The program's only been going for 2 years, and so we don't have a big body of knowledge, but the way we are approaching evaluating it is sort of in three different ways. One is we're looking at the stream gauge information in the basin, and we're trying to compare that again to the long-term historic flow. We're also keeping books, if you will, because we know what the consumptive use impact of the groundwater we've allocated is compared to the water that's going in stream. And we're way in the black in terms of the mitigation, if you compare the mitigation to the consumptive use. And I think people testified somewhere between 2,500 and 3,000 acre-feet of water protected for mitigation and a little over 700 consumed. And the third way that we're monitoring this is through the development of a computer model to essentially try to model the pluses, if you will, of the mitigation and the minuses, if you will, of the consumptive use. And so we don't really have a lot of hard data yet because we're pretty early in the program, but the information that we have to date is that the program is protecting the values of the scenic waterway, and it is protecting the values of the in-stream water rights.
One last question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Alan, if this bill were not to pass, what would that mean for the Deschutes Basin? What would it mean for the farmers and the cities and the like?
Chair Jensen and Representative Burley, that's a great question. And I want to make sure that members of the committee understand that there's a lot of economic development and demand for the water in the basin, and there's a lot of irrigation districts in the basin with water rights. And it seems like a really logical thing to do to get those water rights from the districts that are being urbanized to the cities to provide water. And the only tool we have to do that right now is the mitigation program, where the districts can take that water, place it in stream, and get credit for doing that, and the cities then and others have an opportunity for economic development and new water supply. And it's a win-win because you restore stream flow at the same time you provide credit. So with that, without this program, we don't have that tool. We don't have a good mechanism to move the water rights from the irrigators to those that need it for economic development. And we will be in a permit issuance moratorium, essentially, until we get this figured out.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Barnhart, we have 2 minutes. That's fine. I mean, I'm... go ahead.
Will he be back?
I think Adam will always be here when...
Well, until such time... Because I think, I think I need more than 2 minutes, and I'll just defer.
Thank you. Well, we're looking at, you know, going on 5 minutes to the hour.
I know, and I understand why.
Yeah. Okay.
Mr. Chair, if I may just follow up on what Representative Burley was asking. I'm really interested in that, too. So you're saying that none of these rules that we've been operating on for the last several years would apply. So there's no process for mitigation. There will be no new permits. Am I correct in assuming that? Is that what I heard?
Representative Jensen and Representative Tomei, if the Court of Appeals opinion were to stand...
Which is it, is, if I may follow up, as it is now, right?
As it is now.
Tomorrow, next week...
If it were to stand, and like I said earlier, we will be seeking review on a parallel track if 3494 is not successful. But let's just say that the Court of Appeals opinion were to stand, it would set up an impossible standard for mitigation in the Deschutes Basin. And while we might be able to operate under the statutory requirement with no rules, that mitigation must be provided, the court has sort of opined that the mitigation that can actually occur, in their opinion, doesn't meet the test for maintaining stream flow. And so what we're asking, I think the court has given the legislative body an entree, an invitation, not that you need one, but to step back and say the department's program that evaluates common sense, it looks at on-the-ground issues and the complex hydrogeology, this bill says that, in fact, that does meet the requirements of the Scenic Waterway Act only for the purposes of the Deschutes Basin. So this is a really narrow opportunity to continue operating under this program. The other thing this bill does is at the very end, I don't remember what section number.
But Adam, I'm sorry. What I want to understand, thank you, Mr. Chair. What I want to understand is if this bill doesn't pass, or from now until if it does pass and it goes to the Senate and gets a governor's signature, between now and whenever, what happens regarding mitigation and new permits?
Representative Jensen, Representative Tomei, we're not in a good position to issue any new groundwater permits or any new permanent mitigation projects in the basin.
We are going to have to call a timeout, and I appreciate Representative Barnhart your consideration on this, and I'm sure Adam will be back with us on Friday. I assume that Water Watch will be back with us on Friday. I would it will be a work session invited testimony only, but I will entertain if it is a rebuttal, you want to call it, the opportunity for a rebuttal or for counter or different points of view on this. And I think having nothing further to say, at this particular point and time being of the essence for it, we are going to close the meeting today and stand adjourned until Friday, when this issue will be brought for us again. Yeah.